Welcome back to a new episode of the Business of Making podcast. In this episode, we answer more of your questions. We've asked you to ask us pretty much anything inside of a Facebook group, and you have asked us some really good questions about Instagram and custom orders and selling wholesale and so much more. And we answer it all in the show today. Let's dive in. Do you want to make it as a maker? This is the Business of Making podcast with your hosts, Michaela Denvers, Deb Engelmeyer, and Jess Van Den.
We know from experience that growing a handmade business is bloody hard work. We're here to make it a little bit easier for you by dishing out reality-based, no BS, tried and tested advice on how to make your business work.
Tune in every week for an honest conversation on what it really takes to make a creative business a success.
So we have something pretty exciting coming at you in June. We are doing an email marketing workshop. It's going to be a live interactive workshop series specifically for makers. So we really believe that email marketing is essential to growing a successful handmade business online. We talk about it a lot, but it can seem overwhelming and complicated to get started and to grow. I mean, you know, what software should you use? What do you send? And why isn't Instagram plus other social media enough by itself?
That is a really good question, Jess. So what we're going to cover in this interactive workshop series, and by we, I mean Jess, Mick and Deb from The Business of Making, we'll basically guide you through a three-step process to set up, to plan, and to grow your email list. So really, we want this to be, no more I'll get it done one day. We want to sit down and spend these three sessions with you and make sure that you get it done.
I think that's my favorite part of this series, is that this aren't just a webinar that you are going to watch and do it later. This is really, we're going to teach you what to do, then actually make time for you to get the work done while you're there. So this is really as close as it gets to working with us one-on-one.
So if you want to sign up, if you're interested, you want to know more and you want us to tell you about it, which we hope you do, of course, just head on over to thebusinessofmaking.com/workshops, pop your email in there, get on our list, and we'll let you know when the workshops are available and ready to sign up.
Welcome everyone to episode 29 of the Business of Making podcast. As always, I'm here. Oh, this is Deb, by the way. I'm here with Jess.
Hello.
And Mick.
Hello.
And today we are doing the part two of our Q&A. So you've asked us questions in our Facebook group at thebusinessofmaking.com/Facebook, and we're going to answer them on the show for you. But before we do that, I wanted to give a shout out to one of our Patreon, and her name is Melissa Zeppa from Zeppa Studios, which is spelled Z-E-P-P-A Studios. And Melissa makes artfully created gifts for pet lovers. So if you love dogs especially, because that's kind of a specialty, you'll want to go and check out her work, which you can do by going on her website at thebusinessofmaking.com/supporters. And you'll find a link to a shop. So thank you so much, Melissa, for supporting the show. And thank you for, to all of our Patreons, really. We really appreciate your support, which keeps the show going. And actually, we do have a goal. When we get 8 more Patreons, we're going to do a full live Q&A session with the 3 of us and our Patreons. So come on, what's the URL, girls? I forgot. thebusinessofmaking.com/support. No.
Or they can just go to patreon.com/tbom, T-B-O-M.
Okay.
Even though we stole that from the Book of Mormon, but whatever, they can share.
They won't mind.
Which I just saw recently. It was very funny. Anyway, segue.
Okay, so should we dive into those questions?
Yes.
There's a few. Yes. We haven't really read them in advance. I mean, we did when you guys posted in the Facebook group, but we kind of forgot what they were. So we'll see what we have to say. So the first one is from Claire, and Claire says, how do I keep track of orders and requests coming in, particularly from a custom point of view? I wish I had some idea of what to do when I started. It would have been way less tears and stress. Okay, so I'm going to direct that to you, Jess, because I feel like you would have a bit more experience here.
Yes, we have a very strict system in place that was developed over time. Now, there are two of us, which makes it even more important that we have a system in place so that we don't make the wrong thing or send the wrong thing to the wrong person or forget to make something. All of these things have happened because sometimes the system goes wrong, but generally speaking, it works really well. So I'll share what we do. It would work for someone who just has themselves as well. We have email comes through and Nick writes it down. We have an order book. So we have an actual physical, just spiral bound lined notebook. And that's like the order Bible. Like everything goes in there. So it's all in one place. And people said, why don't you just print things out and stuff? Well, I don't want to waste the paper. Like we can put an order in a couple of lines on the spiral bound book and that's all we need. And the beautiful thing about that is I can always look back because we have a column with the date that the order came in. We have a column that explains where it came from, like which venue, Etsy, Aaron, site, whatever. We have the name of the person. We have exactly what they've ordered with the details. And then we have a column for when it's shipped. So we put the date in there. So all of the information is really quickly accessible there. And what we do as well, so Nick will write it down. And he also writes a post-it. So we have the book and we have a post-it note with all the details for every single order. So he gives them to me. I then double check and make sure the information is correct. He then takes the post-it note downstairs to our studio. And that is the thing that goes with the order. So the order actually, the pieces for the order actually go on top of the post-it note as they're in progress. Obviously they're jewelry, so it's small, but if you're making big stuff, you could put the post-it note with the pile, like if you're making clothes or whatever, and each part of the process, and it stays with the order until it's packed in its envelope, and then the post-it note goes in the bin and we get the book again and we put the date that it was shipped. So that ensures that both of us always are aware of what's going on. It means that, you know, we keep track of all of our orders in chronological order as they've come in and as they go out. And we keep all of the important information with the order at all times so that, you know, we don't forget anything important about that order, especially if you're making custom orders. I think that's really important. If there's lots of details, it might not fit on a post-it note, but you could, you know, scale things up and do it on a larger scale, I guess, if you wanted to.
That sounds like a really good system. I'm trying to remember. Hi, everyone. Michaela here. I'm sick again. So sorry for my voice and also my slow talking and brain. I'm trying to remember what I used to do and I can't remember because it was so long ago now. I think because I didn't sell through my website, I mostly sold at markets, which is obviously just right there, and so you don't really need that sort of order taking system. But I did sell through Facebook quite a bit back in like 2012 when that was a thing and it was quite successful at the time. Not so easy anymore. Yeah, I have no idea. Maybe something like that. I definitely remember having like there needed to be one place where all the orders went into. I can't remember if I hand wrote it or I think I might have had a spreadsheet or something like that. I think that is so important because just trying to keep track of emails is impossible. Like they just fly off into the ether and have no idea what's going on.
We have a system with our emails too, like the different colored stars, like a normal order will be a red star, an express order will be a yellow star, a tracked order will be a blue star. And then, so Nick writes them down, he gives me the book, I check the order, then I actually put the email in a two-pack folder, and then because he does the packing. So then he goes back and he gets all of the packing stuff and he goes to the two-pack folder in our inbox, in our email, and he goes, okay, well, these are all the things that we're making at the moment. I need to write an envelope for them all. And then, it's a whole big system.
Yeah, that's awesome. And it is all about systems and processes, isn't it? Like you can't just kind of do it willy-nilly. It's not everything's going to fall. The wagon is going to break and fall apart and it's going to be chaos. So
we made that mistake back in the day before we had
And I think everyone does. Like it's not I wouldn't expect anyone starting out, but also even anyone who's been a few years in to have those systems and processes in place for practice and working out what works for you and, all that stuff.
Can I add two quick stories here? One, never delete emails. I've seen this in Facebook groups. People are like, so once you finish an order, do you delete the email? I'm like, no, never delete it. I've had people come back to me 5 years later like, can I get this repaired or can I get this in a new ring or something? And I just search their name and boom, there's the information. So never, ever do that.
There's also no need to delete emails
these days,
especially if you're on Gmail. Yeah, just, or, you know, any online email system, just archive so you can search it later.
And the other one is literally from the other night. We went out to dinner. It was my birthday last week and it's my dad's birthday yesterday. So we went out to dinner at this really, look, we went to this nice Thai restaurant. The food was awesome, but we didn't get it all. Their kitchen is a systematic nightmare. The boss came out, like, Nick didn't get his meal. My mum didn't get her rice. And we, like, the food came out. There was half an hour gap between the first meal and the third meal. And we were like, this is weird. And the boss comes out. He looks so browbeaten. I don't know. He's like, I'm so sorry. This is obviously not the first time this has happened. Oh, I'm so sorry. They're supposed to. He's like, they have texters. They're supposed to cross out each thing as they make it in the kitchen, and they're just not doing it. And that is a system failure. Like, he needs to teach his people to follow the system. And if they don't follow the system, there needs to be consequences for that. And there's consequences for him. He's getting unhappy customers. You know, so systems are so important and they need to be followed and they need to be implemented, especially more than one person happening.
Yeah. And obviously, as that story shows, it's across every single business and every single business. You need those systems and processes.
Yeah, and they need to work for you as well. So you might need to tweak that and refine that so that, you know, you have something that works for you. I'd love to ask Claire, who asked the question as well, because she did say it would have been way less tears and stress, which I'm guessing she's figured out maybe a system for herself now. Or if you're listening to this show and you have a custom system that you'd like to share, come on over to the Facebook group and let us know, because you might have other ideas that we didn't cover here that might serve other people. Okay, second question is from Jocelyn, and Jocelyn says, what is the best way to contact and follow up with potential wholesale customers? And what is the preferred way to collect payment from them? As in, do I use my website and they complete a checkout process, or do I just email them with an invoice?
Jess, for you.
That's an excellent question. Sorry, what was the first part of that again?
The best way to contact and follow up with potential customers.
Don't just walk in the door. That's generally not the wisest thing to do. If you already have a relationship with that shop, like, you know the person already, they know you, then you can maybe go, hey, so do you guys do wholesale or something like that? But if they're an unknown to you, the best thing is email. So I have a whole course on this. I'm sure we probably all do. But send them a short email with a couple of photos of your work, and just test the waters and see if they're interested in your designs and in what you're making. And you can follow up with them in that way. Some places might have a phone, and if you're happy to talk on the phone, then that might be a good follow-up, but don't start with the phone call. Some places have buyers that aren't the owner who do the buying for them. So, you know, you might not be talking to the right person. Basically, I think it's just don't put people on the spot, because people don't tend to react well to that, I think. Cold calling, basically. It's not something I recommend. Mm. Does anyone have something to add on that before I move on to the next thing?
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
Sounds good.
And the second part, the best way to take orders. Look, there's so many options here. One of the easiest ones is what I used to do when I did wholesale was I just had a code that I gave wholesale buyers to use on my website that gave them 50% off their order. So I did this, you know, there was a different code per wholesale buyer per order. So I actually gave them a code every single time. And you can set, the nice thing about that is you can set it up. So you can say they have to buy a minimum of this many things or spend a minimum of this amount of money before the code will work. Cause you have those wholesale limits, right? That they have to buy a certain amount and whatnot. So that was an easy way to do it for me as well, because I didn't have to do anything special. I didn't have to send them an invoice. Mm. I didn't have to, you know, have a separate website that's just for wholesale or a login for them for wholesale, stuff like that. And you could settle those limits. So that's the way that I did it. And that is one way you can do it.
Yeah, I think that's great. I think if you don't have your own website, though, the email with invoice is still definitely an option.
Yeah.
But if you already have that system in place with your cart and you can just do the coupon code, I think, you know, WooCommerce, Shopify will let you do that. Then that's a really easy way to do it. You've got to think about what's easy for them as well, so that they actually feel like getting an order from you isn't like a pain where they've got to log in, you know, and they forgot their password. And so that's actually really super easy. I might just throw in a resource. It's someone in our industry that I really love, which is Claire Yule. I'm probably mispronouncing her last name, but I love her. If we had a fourth member on this podcast, I would want Claire because she's so funny and she's brilliant. And all she does, she has a retail store herself. So she's a retailer. And so she teaches makers how to get their store in, their products in stores. And so our website is indieretailacademy.com. And just go and check out. She's got amazing free resources as well as templates and stuff. And she really, really knows her stuff. That's a specialty. So there you go.
Oh, awesome. We love extra resources.
Hey there, maker. Are you loving this podcast as much as we love bringing it to you? If so, we would love to talk to you about supporting us on Patreon. Becoming one of our patrons is a way to support the show and to help us produce it each week. You can help for as little as $1 a month and you get access to behind the scenes, extra content we won't share anywhere else, a link to your shop on our website, and even a shout out on the podcast. To learn more, simply go to thebusinessofmaking.com/support. And now back to the show.
Next question is from Jocelyn as well. So Jocelyn also asks, do you have any tips on how to make your Instagram feed look better and how to have more engaging posts?
Oh man, we could do a whole episode on that.
Yeah, we should.
Maybe we should do a whole episode
on like Instagram. Yeah.
I think consistency is key, and consistency in lighting and style, knowing what your customers actually want to engage with. So there's no point posting stuff on Instagram that doesn't bring value to your audience or doesn't like interest them in any way. You need to educate or entertain or inspire. Like it needs to have some sort of value to your people. First and foremost, and then I think after that comes the aesthetics. So, yeah, as I said, like consistency in lighting and style and like color temperature, I think product-based businesses is really important. A lot of the new students that I get in that I audit their business is that's one of the problems that they have is that they have great products and even great sort of styling of their product photos, but they're all just slightly different color temperatures.
So, so annoying.
Often their white backgrounds are all like a little bit yellow or a little bit pink or a little bit blue or a mix of all three. So, getting that right, I think, is really important.
I would agree.
Yeah, I like to think of it as, well, for the first part of the question, which is just the look of your feed, first use one of these free tools that let you see like a preview of all your pictures coming up in a grid, because honestly, it's so hard to plan visually without seeing them all together. And you'll quickly see, oh, this one kind of like doesn't work with the other one. And I like to think about like three words that you would want your brand or your feed to like feel and look like. And every time you upload a picture, just ask yourself, is this joyful? Is this bright? Is this whatever the third word is? I ran out of ideas.
That is such a good tip. And, you know, even as a graphic designer and as a branding type person, I struggled myself with that for so long around my own brand. And then I just had this light bulb moment. I'm like, oh, I'll put together a mood board of all the types of images just in, one of the Shutterstock or whatever it was, image sites of the types of images that represented my brand. And then I could go back to that every time I was posting anything going, does the image I'm posting now fit within this aesthetic of this other, you know, style that I'm trying to go for? And it makes such a difference having that to refer back to. So I think it's really important. I'm losing my voice.
Oh, no. That's a really good idea, though.
Going.
It's going.
And then the second part of the question is about engagement. And I love that you're asking this question first, because this is like the most important thing on Instagram. I think a lot of people are like so focused on like and getting more followers. And really, it doesn't matter if you don't have 10K followers, as long as people are engaging with you on your post, that's really the most important thing. So thank you for, pointing that out. And then what I'd say is really ask yourself, what do you think that you're going onto Instagram for and that your people are going to Instagram for? Like we don't go on Instagram to get an image that says 20% off my new collection this spring, visit bit.ly/UVW5.
You know, like everyone go to that URL right now.
So, you know, no one goes to Instagram to be sold stuff to. Mm-hmm. So you really, and I know the end goal is for you to sell your products. Like if not, it's a complete waste of time. But weirdly, to do that, you don't want to be selling too hard all the time. And so you really want to be engagement comes from like people having a laugh, something being motivating, entertaining, funny, motivational, whatever your brand and products, obviously, you know, it needs to work with it. But really ask yourself, what is this person waiting at the bus stop or watching the TV or slouching on the couch? Like, what do they want to see when they log into Instagram, and give that to them? So if you're selling like pet arts, or, you know, we were saying, for example, Melissa does gifts around pets and dogs. Play with that, you know, like cute pictures of dogs and cats and whatever, and funny videos and things like that that are really going to create engagements and people sharing and liking and commenting.
I think that's a really good point. And also touching on exactly what you were just saying, Deb, I think in Instagram for engagement, just throwing this controversial opinion out there, that it's probably not controversial at all. the caption is more important than the image. The image is what gets people to stop and look and maybe double tap, but what gets them to engage is what's in the caption. And I think it's really important to create a story as much as you can and put your customer in that story. So as an example, if you have a picture of maybe you sell baby booties or something, and you caption one like baby booties 20% off, exactly as you were saying, Deb, and then a few weeks later you do the same again, but you're like telling a story about how your best friend's about to have a baby and you're so excited and you can't wait to give her these booties because her baby's going to be walking around, I don't know, some story that your customer can, like, they get involved with and they get they can relate to it in some way. They're so much more likely then to engage with that post, either by commenting or, you know, doing whatever, than if it's just like 20% off, like no one cares about that really.
Yeah, I've noticed that a lot in my own Instagram. You know, if I open up a little bit and tell a bit more about my life or something I'm thinking about, or, you know, then I'm way more likely to get engagement and comments rather than just, here's a pretty picture. And I do that too, but I try to somehow put some sort of little story or something in there.
Yeah. I just have one more tip, sorry, for the aesthetic, how to make the feed look good. I think it's really important if you have had your Instagram for a little while to actually go back through and audit your own feed as well. So you can archive posts now. So, yeah, archive all these posts. You can archive, but really go through and, like, anything that talks about a market date specifically, or a giveaway or a loop or anything like that, just archive that shit. No one wants to see it, especially if it's months after the date and they can't even enter anyway. And you can also then audit visually as well. So if your feed is like really light and bright and then you see just a couple of images that are like maybe a bit darker and they don't really fit, just archive them. Like, no one, even if they like got a good amount of likes or whatever, it doesn't matter. Like, people aren't going to be going back 4 months and saying, oh, this post got 100. Like, who cares?
Yeah.
You audit that and now make sure that the feed is like, looks really, again, consistent and, you know, appeals to your audience.
Yeah. I think don't be afraid to archive. I've been brutal at times with my accounts, just archiving.
Yeah. I think I
need to do more actually, but yeah. It feels good.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah, it feels really good.
Deep and don't obsess with it too. Like, you know, it's okay if your feed isn't perfect, like your life isn't perfect, your customers aren't perfect, and we certainly aren't perfect. I think that's why we love doing this show and being very, you know, open and honest with you all. It's important to pay attention to that. But if it means that you're not posting at all because you're scared this picture doesn't work with the last one, like, it doesn't matter. Just start doing it. You'll get better at it.
Yeah,
as you do it.
Totally. Yeah, sure. There's no Instagram police that are going to come along and say, that one's not good enough. You don't need to worry about that. It's not a big deal. Like, actually, this is what kind of gets to me a lot, or makes me think a lot or something. I don't know. Again, brain is a bit fuzzy. But, like, just people are worrying so much about shit that doesn't actually matter. Like, don't stress about having this perfectly aesthetic curated thing. And exactly as you said, Deb, and that makes you stops you from actually participating in the platform at all. Like, it's just so silly. Just get out there and do it.
Yeah. Last tip before we move on to the next question, back to not the aesthetics, but the caption thing that you were talking about before, Mick. Ask yourself when you write the caption, would I reply to that myself? Like, because if your caption doesn't have a call to action or a question or something that's actually asking for engagement, people are not going to engage. So if it's I'm working on this new set of blah, blah, blah. Okay, cool.
Like,
exactly. That's what goes on in everyone's brain. Yeah. It's like, cool. And then keep scrolling. But they're not going to write or type cool. They're just going to like think that and then scroll. Yeah.
Exactly.
So, you know, really ask them, like, give me a double tap if you agree. Let me know in the comments below which one is your favorite color, or, you know, what do you do when your dog does that or whatever. Just ask a question or tell them to do something so that they actually engage. Because I know it sounds stupid, but people need to be told what to do, me included.
Yeah. And just quickly, don't forget about Instagram stories. They've made it so freaking easy to get engagement on Instagram stories. It's ridiculous. Like the amount of interactive tools there are in there. And the more interaction you get, the more engagement you get on Instagram stories, the more people are going to see them and the more people are going to see you. So don't forget about those. Like ask a question, use that yes, no feature, use the slider, use the, there's so, like, I don't know, there's like five
call,
that you can use now to get it. Actual engagement in, and interaction. And don't be afraid to be a bit silly with it. Like I like to every few days just ask some silly question on my Instagram stories. It doesn't necessarily have to do any have anything to do with your business. Like I'll use an example. Just the other day, you guys, I don't know if you guys saw it, but I got my period and I just felt like crap and I didn't want to work and do anything. And I came across this cute cartoon that was like this girl going, I'm gonna get so much done today, and then the next bit was like her being punched in the stomach with a fist that said period. And I put it on my Instagram stories and put a little, is this relatable or relatable question mark, yes no, 100% yes relatable. Obviously my audience are mostly women, but it was just like silly things like that that people relate to and engage with. Oh, they see themselves in it, it gives them a laugh, whatever, as long as it's like somewhat related to you as a person or to you as a brand, then it's fine. Like put it in there. Don't overthink it. What Mick was saying, especially with stories, they disappear after 24 hours.
Yeah. You don't have to stress about the aesthetics of it. It's going away. Yeah, you should be imperfect on it.
Exactly. Yeah. You can be a lot more sort of messy and chaotic for sure. I think we should definitely do this in another episode.
We just keep going.
Oh my God, we're totally forgetting the rest of the questions. Okay, next one is from Sammy. And Sammy, this one's going to be really quick because we have an episode about this that we've already recorded and you can already listen to it. And it's, is it worth paying for Facebook or Instagram ads? If yes, what's the tricks? So I think this was last week. So not last week.
Episode 27.
Oh, thanks, Mick. Episode 27. We did a full episode on that. So go and listen to it. The next one is from Modest Twine and it says, how to deal with people's negativity? The, you're still doing that silly hobby thing kind of comments. That fires me up.
That's my answer. Fuck those people. And not in the good way.
I'm kind of with you. I'm like, why are these people in your life?
Sometimes you don't need them. They're like your spouse or whatever, or your parents.
And well, you need to have a hard conversation with them. Yeah. And honestly, the problem might be coming from the fact that you are still looking at yourself as doing a silly little hobby thing. Mm. Like own up to what you're doing. You have a shop, you're a business owner. And from the moment you start feeling this way, people are going to start seeing that in you. But, and I'm not saying that's what's happening with you, but I know with a lot of makers, they actually are just, you know, if they're like at a barbecue or like at a, I don't know, family dinner, they're like, oh yeah, you know, I've been doing my side thing with Etsy, like because we're a bit shy or we don't want to sound like, yeah, I'm doing this amazing thing. But that's what you're putting out there. And so that's what people think. This is that first thing. And then if that's not the case, and if that's just people being negative, just get rid of them.
Yeah. I mean, I think like my first response is what I think, except there, you know, more serious answer. This is an issue and it's not just a, it's a really broad issue. And it actually, I think, comes down to the value that we place on arts, crafts and design in Australia in general and the world. But, you know, like there's just not a lot of education or, you know, government funded initiatives out there that place value on these careers, and it's a problem, and that's where this sort of mindset is coming from. So don't beat yourself up if you do have that mindset of I am playing small, like I am just thinking of it as my hobby, so it's all my fault. It's not really, it's bigger than that. But do recognize that you can make a difference in your own sphere of your environment by really placing more importance on that, on what you're doing, and calling yourself an entrepreneur and telling everyone that you have a business, not a side hobby or a side job or a side hustle. It is your business. So if you're working full time and you have a business, you know, you have a full-time and a part-time job. Like, they're legitimate careers here. And yeah, it's kind of a bigger issue than what I, you know, my response saying, fuck them, it's a little bit hard if it is your husband or your close friends or whatever. But yeah, I don't know. It's complex, I think.
It is complex. And I think another important thing is to actually find people who do support you.
100%.
Yeah, so find that community.
And the research backs that up. So the research actually says that women who have that support network like just succeed so much more than those that don't. So you need to find your people 100%.
Yeah, so wherever that is, whether it's our community, our individual communities, another community, I don't really care. Just find a community of people who will support you and understand what you're doing. I mean, I think that's why the three of us all have it. Like, we all have our membership groups that we started. The reason is because we kept seeing people looking for that community, looking for that support and struggling to find it, you know? So it is so, so important. So definitely, definitely go find those communities and make sure that you are engaging with them and that they are there to support you. And you will find you are not alone at all in this feeling. Like, so many people, I want you to know that as well. So many people are going through this as well and struggling with family people, members who don't believe in them, and also struggling with not believing in themselves. And it makes a huge difference.
Mm. Mm. I think it's really important to also remember that it's not actually about you and it's not about what you're doing. It's there.
Yes.
Usually, if it's a family member especially and they feel unsupportive, maybe not usually, but a lot of the time it's probably coming from a place of concern. They're, you know, they're concerned for you and they want you to, you know, be the best you can be sort of thing. And they don't, it's a misunderstanding. Like, they don't understand that this is a thing that could be a real job for you.
Yeah, especially if you're selling online in this day and age, people just still don't get it. Like, they don't see that it's a real thing. Like, I had that experience with my own family. I mean, my dad was so skeptical. You know, he's been in business his whole life. And he's like, you're making jewelry? And that was like nothing like I'd ever done before either. Mm-hmm. But then I started making money. I tell you what, that's the biggest way to get them to prove them wrong. Mm-hmm. Is to make money and go, well, look at this. Oh, I made a few $1,000s now, you know, and they're like, oh, wait a minute. It's actually legitimate. So work harder and prove them wrong. Ha.
Yeah, that's right. I think it is worth pointing out, and I don't want to, I don't want to give too much weight to people like that. But at the same time, if it is someone that you trust and you've trusted their opinion in the past, and you are really, really struggling with making whatever it is work, then, you know, take what they're saying on board enough that you can, you know, take an objective look at your own business and see if there is something that you should be doing differently. So don't just be super stubborn and be like, no, I'm going to make this work, and you're making $2 an hour and you're just like continually trying and trying and trying and not changing anything up in your business. So again, I don't want to put too much weight. Like, this is two different situations here. There's the people who are just naysayers and they don't get it and they're like, oh, that's a dumb idea, or you're never going to make it, blah, blah, blah. And there's people who are really like, oh, this is a great idea, but it's not really working for you at the moment. Have you thought about doing it, you know, like this or whatever? So just, you know knowing yourself too, that whose opinion you trust and whose opinion you will take on board, and don't let it make you doubt yourself, but allow yourself to be able to look at your systems and processes and your own business and see, okay, is there some gaps here that I'm missing because I'm too involved in it?
Yeah, I agree.
Great tips. Okay, next one is from Jackie. Jackie says, what ways besides social media can I market my product to drive traffic to my Etsy shop? So we'll talk Etsy, but I think anything that we're going to say about traffic is also applicable to your own website or whatever platform you use to sell your product to. So really it's, how can I get traffic to my store beside social media? And we've got a lot of people that commented on that question saying, I want to know that too. Me too. I second this one. Traffic. I need more traffic. Hello. Where are the people? So I like to think of traffic as two main categories, paid and free. Paid, it's paid advertisement. And we were saying episode 27, I think there's a full episode on that to see if you're ready and how to use it. And then there's free traffic. And I guess that's more where the question is, which is like, how do I get more people to my shop without, you know, breaking the bank? social media not being part of the equation here. what do we have next? SEO, I'm going to say first thing is for Etsy SEO, but also Google SEO. And I'll throw in Pinterest in there because although it's a social media with air quote, it's not really, and it really works as a search engine, but with images. So Pinterest would be a high recommendation for me. What else, girls?
Sorry, just before we move on from Pinterest, I just want to throw out that we are still doing the Pinterest challenge.
Yes!
I think, I can't remember which episode we started that in, but a few people were interested in joining that challenge. So I still need the accountability because I still haven't done anything about it. So if anyone wants to jump into our Facebook group and find someone posted, anyway, I'll post a new post in there about the Pinterest challenge. If you need to get started with Pinterest, we'll do all that together. we'll make a start.
Make it accountable.
We had a few people saying that they've listened to that episode actually and say, hey, I'm in for the Pinterest accountability. I'm in that boat. I haven't started yet.
we'll get on that.
But those really are the two main ones. The two main online, apart from social media, it's Pinterest and SEO. Beyond that, reaching out, like PR is the other
one.
So reaching out to bloggers, reaching out to magazines, reaching out to newspapers, whatever, you know, whoever might be talking about what you do and getting yourself in front of them so that they can send people your way.
Yeah. One last one, which is kind of social media, but also kind of not too. It's almost becoming like its own thing now. It's influencer marketing, which is like working with people that have a bigger audience than what you do. They could be bloggers. They could be Instagrammers, because Instagrammer is also a new word. And working with them to get your products out there. That's all like the online stuff. But what I'd like to say is, why do you say besides social media? Because it sounds like that might be the problem and that you're thinking, I'm doing social media, it's not working. And if that's the case, then I say maybe look at what is not working in your social media strategy to improve that, because there is definitely reasons to be using social media to promote your shop. So, you know, if you're using Instagram, you're not seeing enough engagement, enough traffic from that, then maybe look at how you can improve that rather than just going, I don't want to use social media anymore, what's left? Because there's nothing that says that going to do PR is going to suddenly work better than social media could. So it might be a matter of like recalibrating that strategy instead.
Yeah. It could be. I sort of, again, I say sorry and interrupt and I just keep steamrolling and continue on anyway. Just having a drink now, it's fine. What I get from that question is that perhaps, yeah, it might be that they feel that social media is not working for them. But I know a lot of people too are concerned about like missing out on doing all the things. And so they want to know all of the options of what they should be doing. So, of course, there's all these different options that you can do online, not to mention the offline methods that you could also do, which we can go into in a sec maybe. But you shouldn't be doing all of them. I think that's a really important point to get across, is that you only really need to be doing one or two, would you say, girls? Like, or even one if you can get it right. If you can work out, you know, what's going wrong in that funnel or that process, and then optimize it for your situation, then you should really only need to do one, maybe. But anyway, my point being that you don't need to do all of them. Like, you don't need to be doing 15, because that's how you spread yourself too thin and then nothing's working.
No, and then with social media, like pick one and then I just send the post through to the other ones. Like I'll post on Instagram and send the post through to my Facebook page and it gets engagement. Like don't overthink it. Don't think like you have to have a separate strategy for every single social media. I'll send it through to my Twitter, whatever. Like the chances of people seeing that in all three places are minuscule. The chances of them seeing it in any of those places is minuscule. So the more ways you can send stuff out, the better. And I also just want to point out one more way that's really important. And you should be coming and joining our landing page. Go to our landing page that we talked about at the beginning and sign up for our workshop series on this, which is email marketing. Like, it is so important and it's so not what people think about, I think, in our industry a lot of the time. It's like, well, I'll just, you know, social media and Pinterest and SEO and great. But that's not the end of the story. If you can get people onto your email list, especially if you have a business that relies on or is well-suited to return customers, this should be what you're focusing on. 100%, you should be focusing on getting people onto your mailing list and marketing to the people who are already really interested in your business that way.
Mm-hmm. And just building that relationship, because even if you're getting people to your Etsy or website from SEO or social media or wherever, it doesn't mean that they're going to buy straight away. Like, yeah, sure, get the traffic on there and then, you know, they got to see it seven times if that research is concurrent before they're going to buy anyway. So you need to then give them somewhere else to go if they're not making a purchase to then warm them up to get them excited about buying at a later stage.
Yeah.
I was just going to quickly talk about, because we did all the online, obviously there's offline traffic methods too, and there is this sort of, you know, discord between offline and online, because if you give out a business card or a flyer like that, that immediately has an abrupt ending if people don't immediately like type in the URL, blah, 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 to get to your website. But there is, we've been teaching in my graphic design class at the university at the moment about digital platforms, but adapting traditional offline stuff to the digital space and how you can do that. And there's a lot of stuff that you can do at the moment. So obviously QR codes, but there's a little bit of, again, discord around that because you need the app to like actually do the QR code. There's a lot of stuff you can do around augmented reality, which is really cool. And this is all sort of more stuff that you would talk about with your graphic designer or branding person, but there are definitely ways that you can get people from like the real world face-to-face environment onto your shop and website and mailing list a little bit easier than it used to be. So, you know, go to networking events, go to markets, talk to people, like get yourself out there and get your products out there to people that might be interested in, you know, if you got, as long as you're going to things where your audience is or where other interested people might be, like wholesalers and stuff like that.
Yeah. The biggest thing people can do at like markets, just have your Instagram handle really visible. Like that's what I always do when I go to a market and I'm interested in something but I don't want to buy. I'm like, oh, there's their Instagram. Look it up, follow, boom. So yeah. I've made that connection with them.
I think that's such a good point. I think Instagram, more so than Facebook or any other social media platform, is the most accessible from offline. So if people are offline, they obviously will have the phone with them all the time. They're not going to whip out their phone and open their Gmail account and type in your email address to contact you, but they will whip out their phone and open Instagram and do a quick search and find you immediately. So I think that's a really, really good point.
Yeah. Definitely. An email list as well. I love signing up for mailing list when I'm at a market. Like I go to
like writing down.
Yeah, writing down.
Or the ones where they have the app and you can literally type your mail and your screen into their into their tablet.
That's amazing. I've had really good success as a market stall holder doing that.
You go to a market and like I go to those big ones in Sydney and there's like 50 or 200 like all the stalls are like amazing. Unless you have $10,000 to spend on that day, like you're not going to be able to buy all the stuff that you really think is cute. And so you go with whatever is coming next in mind. So maybe it's Mother's Day next. So you're like, oh, I'm going to buy this the thing for my mom, or it's the market before Christmas. So you're focusing on gifts. There's other stuff that you're like, well, this is a bad timing. Like I love what you're doing, but I can't buy it now. It's not the perfect time for it. But I love to leave my email because in my head, I'm like, I would love for you to keep emailing me this year when you get new stuff out, because there'll be a stage this year where I'll be like, oh yeah, this is a good time to buy a new pot planter for my office. You know, like, so it's really like, make sure that you take those offline people, real life people, as we call them.
Yeah. And get them online. I shouldn't say that because online is just as real as offline. So
get them into the virtual reality. All right, guys. So I think we're going to wrap this up because we've been talking for a little while already. We did have three more questions. I just want to make sure that you girls don't think we forgot and we didn't see them. It was from Juliana, from Jocelyn again, and from B. And from Hannah. Actually, Hannah asked about us and if we could share a bit more about our own businesses and podcasts. And Anna, I would love you to go and listen to, I think it was the very first episode of The Business of Making, where we each introduce ourselves and what we do. So I recommend you go and listen to that. And then B, Jocelyn and Juliana, we are going to record full episodes on your questions. Juliana asked a very interesting question about keeping your business small while still being successful and the concept of smallering, which you think deserve a full episode. And then Jocelyn and B had a question about launching a new product, a new collection, a new website. And so we'll do a full episode on that as well. It's coming soon, promise. If you've enjoyed this episode, make sure you share it with other makers. You can take a screenshot, share that on Instagram, on Facebook, or in other Facebook groups of makers that might be interested in listening to us rambling about, you know, making it happen with your business. And the last thing I'd like to say is remember to go and check out our email series workshop. Workshop series is the right order of the words. Email workshop series. I'm French, you guys. I mess it up. Because it's coming soon in June and you'll get all the details and you can sign up for the waiting list at thebusinessofmaking.com/workshop. Thank you so much and we'll see you or chat to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.